Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Losers, in other words.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
All right, right back to it here in the 5 o'clock hour. Thanks for tuning in. I'm the Bulldog. Mike Shope has gone home ill. We're going to go right to the Wester Hotline and welcome in Jonathan Willis, the Athletic Edmonton, and get his thoughts on their former coach and, I don't know, maybe the Oilers as a trade partner for the Sabres and a potential Rasmus Ristolainen trade. Lots to go over here with Jonathan. Jonathan, thanks for making the time for us. It's Chris here in Buffalo. How are you?
I'm doing well, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So, Todd McLellan is, someone you'd be very familiar with. I'm curious how you felt his tenure in Edmonton was handled. Do you think he got a raw deal? Was he a part of the problem? Like, how would you describe McLellan in his time while you were there covering him?
I think it's a mix of the two. He didn't – obviously the flaws in Edmonton's roster – are not things that any coach was likely to overcome, and McLellan proved unable to do so. But I also don't think he particularly excelled with the Oilers. There were things he did well, things he did poorly. And, you know, when you look at his record between Edmonton and San Jose, he's a guy who comes across, like, he's clearly a qualified NHL head coach, but he's neither, to me, one who's really at the top end of the profession, nor one who's right down at the bottom among the 31. I'd rate him as a sort of a middle tier NHL coach.
And what do you think keeps him from being more highly rated? Is it take it from there.
Well, there are a couple things, and you know, when you hear me level these criticisms, keep in mind there are a lot of things he does well that I'm not highlighting here. I'm highlighting specifically some of his flaws. The first one, I think, is, which we saw in Edmonton, was he, and also saw in San Jose, he has a tendency to go with top-heavy lineups. He's a big believer in playing talent with talent, which, you know, some people are. But a lot of times what ends up happening is your third and fourth lines, as a result, don't have, you know, any kind of depth. Like, the Oilers, back when the Oilers were capable of putting depth together, ran Drake Cajula as a rookie as a center for basically half the year after he was coming off a significant injury in training camp, and it did not work, and they ended up, this was in 2016-17 when they made the playoffs, and they had some depth, and it's something that McLellan always seemed to struggle with in Edmonton, and before that in San Jose, was being able to ice a third and fourth line that could play together, because he would, you know, move centers up to the wings on the top two lines, and it damaged the depth chart. The second thing, I think, is development. He had sort of an uneven track record in Edmonton, but once guys got in the doghouse, it didn't seem like they were able to get out of it. Jesse Puljujarvi is a good example of that. I can't remember if it was three or four straight games early in the season where Puljujarvi was a healthy scratch for the Oilers, and when he was asked about it, you know, McLellan kind of got a little bit defensive and started talking about, well, I'm also healthy scratching Evan Bouchard. Why aren't you guys asking me about Evan Bouchard? Yeah. Which was a little bit different. And then the last area is special teams. So that was a major strength in San Jose, particularly on the power play. But McLellan's Oilers struggled on the power play for the most part and were really bad on the penalty kill for the most part. And some of that's personnel, but to me, special teams are one of those areas where you do really look at coaching and you wonder if there wasn't room to have a superior performance.
Right. I wonder special teams, too. A lot of that, it feels like, falls to the assistants, but, of course, the head coach is the head coach, so ultimately he has final say, I suppose.
Well, the way McLellan explained it in his pressers was that there was a lot of it was a sort of a collegial atmosphere where, you know, like an assistant coach might have the overall authority over the power player, might be directly responsible for it, but it was really group decisions being made. And for most of his tenure in Edmonton, McLellan had the same assistants he'd had in San Jose. So that was a group that had worked together for a long, long time. And, and we're used to that.
Jonathan Willis, The Athletic Edmonton, on the Wester Hotline with us here in Buffalo. I am the Bulldog. This is WGR. So would you say he had command of the room, the players? Like, how did he handle is he a tough guy coach? Is he a player's coach? Like, how would you classify him if you can put him in one of those camps?
Well, that's a tough thing to gauge from the outside. One of the things I thought McClellan did really well was he avoided scapegoating players in the media. He was very respectful, I'd even say sensitive, in terms of how he handled his public presentation of players. And that got away a little bit from him at the end on some of the guys. But mostly he's a player who seems to treat his players with a lot of respect. There were complaints in San Jose, and there were rumors towards the end in Edmonton that, you know, like he was maybe a little too downcast, a little too grumpy. But I think, you know, to some extent, that's just a byproduct of not having success. You know, nobody's going into the rink with a big grin on their face when they're 13th in the Western Conference or whatever.
Yeah, we certainly can understand how that goes here. There's been a lot of talk here in Buffalo, Jonathan, about culture and the chemistry, and I don't know, the Sabres last year set out to repair that and made a Ryan O'Reilly trade and ended up almost as bad as last year. I mean, they didn't finish last, but they're, what, fourth from the bottom? So things don't always turn out as you're intending them to.
Well, culture's a funny thing. I don't think the Blues have any complaints about O'Reilly this year.
I think they're probably doing just fine, yeah, as it turns out. So what kind of a fit do you think McClellan would be for Buffalo? I mean, maybe for the purposes of this conversation, and because I don't want to be too depressed, let's assume they find a way to retain Jeff Skinner. So I've got Eichel, and I've got Reinhardt, and I've got Dahlin. What kind of situation do you think this would be for McClellan? Is this a good fit?
I think so. I actually think Buffalo is a reasonably good fit for McClellan. When we talk about his strengths, one of the things he does, like, he has been around, and when you hire a rookie head coach, and this is, you know, somebody who, I shouldn't say rookie, but somebody who hasn't done it at the NHL level in a head position before, there's always a little bit of question about whether he knows, you know, what's up, whether it's a lot easier to look at him and wonder when the team has struggles. And I think what a guy like McClellan brings is, because he's been in Detroit and he's been in San Jose and he's been in Edmonton, he's a guy who's been around, he knows what's up, he's not... If there's a problem with your team, you know what? He might not be the guy to get you to the Stanley Cup, but he's probably not the guy who's, you know, leading you to a bottom five finish because of failures on his part as a coach. Like, he's not a bad coach. He's a solid guy. He's somebody you can rely on in that respect. And the other thing he does is his teams have a history of being good 5-on-5. Edmonton was not a great 5-on-5 team, but it did improve over his tenure. And he plays, you know, heavy forechecking. More dump and chase than I think is really common in the league these days, but it's an aggressive dump and chase, and it's the kind of thing that does result in decent possession numbers as a rule.
Boy, it feels like dump and chase is like a dirty phrase now in hockey, doesn't it, Jonathan? Like, I think some of our audience, and I know me, like, just like made a face when you said that. Like, wait, what?
Well, and don't misunderstand me, because there's dump and chase and there's dump and chase, right? Like, if you're setting up a whole bunch of 50-50 battles, the odds are really good you're going to lose. Like, if you have three 50-50 battles between your defensive end and the offensive zone, odds are good you're not making it to the offensive end.
Right.
And that's not the way McClellan's system is geared. Like, McClellan's system is geared more towards 70-30 battles, where there's a clear plan to get the puck back, and it's a good way, and they really believe in breaking down defenses through excess shot attempts and things like that. Like, it's designed to be a heavy pressure all the time sort of thing, rather than one of these, you know, toss the puck in and then rush in and hope you get it situations.
This might be a difficult question to answer, but I'm wondering if you have any thought on how adaptable a coach McClellan is. And I ask, Jonathan, for this reason. I think a part of what doomed the Sabres here under Phil Housley is that he came from Nashville with this idea to be activating his defense and be going. And that results in a pretty loose style. And I don't know, you know, I think the proof might indicate that he didn't have the team to really play that way, and that maybe at some point scaling that back might have been called for, and we never really saw that. So I'm wondering if McClelland has, in your experience, any track record of being able to maybe get away from what he feels he wants to do because of the personnel that he's dealt.
Yeah, he does to some extent. Like, I mean, he's not totally set in his ways or anything, but like all coaches, he gets stubborn. Like, the Oilers had a couple of veterans when he came in, Benoit Pouliot, who you know in Buffalo, Mark Fain, Nikita Nikitin, and it wasn't a great list, but you kind of, when he came in, those guys all kind of got black marks next to them, it seemed like, and didn't get used. So you'd have liked to see him try and get a little bit more out of them. He seems to like the guys he likes, but it's tough too, right? Like, on some level, adaptability is a good thing, and on some level, you need to have a system and stick to the system and have everybody buy in, right? What I would say is he's going to be, like, he does have history with aggressive defense, but he's a very, strong fundamentals coach. All his teams tend to have those, the attention to detail and defensive detail in particular. And in Edmonton, he didn't have the horses, but I think that might be a nice shift after somebody with Housley's more aggressive mindset.
We uncovered, and I think I remember the comment from when it first happened, a quote from McClelland talking about, living in the analytical world, but knowing that or believing that the best analytics is a set of eyeballs. Watch the game, watch it again, and make evaluations in that way. How receptive do you know him to be of numbers and usage? And is he someone who's dismissive of that from like old hockey, or is he more open-minded than maybe that quote might indicate?
The thing I would suggest about some of the quotes in Edmonton is because Edmonton is really a one-sport fishbowl, and a lot of the online presence is analytically based, those tend to be the people who are most critical of the coaching staff. So McClelland said a couple of injudicious things while he was in Edmonton, and to me, I read those comments, and this is just my personal perspective on it, but I read those comments more as an indication of the pressure he was feeling and the criticism he was taking than necessarily a rejection of ideas. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'd say, this guy's a real super analytically inclined guy, but I do think he's adaptable and accepting and the kind of person who's intelligent and open-minded enough to make use of the tools that are placed at his disposal.
So L.A. is the other suitor, and I don't know, the lottery's tomorrow. Like, would it surprise you if Tom McClelland is sitting back somewhere waiting to see what happens tomorrow at 8 o'clock and, like, who's drafting where, like, before? Like, how much would you think that would or should play a part in a decision if indeed Buffalo and Los Angeles are the front runners for his services?
Well, his last the last time out, he got pretty good with the lottery, and it didn't end up
right
resulting in team success. So I don't know that I'd read too much into it.
Yeah.
If it were me, I'd look at Buffalo and I'd look at LA and I'd look at the respective ages of the core groups. I'd rather be in Buffalo personally. I just think LA, hockey's a cyclical game, and LA is at a worse place to be on the cycle. You can overcome that with good talent and good management and lots of stuff, but they're starting from further behind than where Buffalo is right now.
Right. The window is, like, I think they might still be viewing it like their window's open, but I don't know if that's realistic, right?
No, well, I mean, you still have Kopitar and Doughty and Carter and these guys, but you look at their ages and you look at the performance of the team this year and you go, is there really a realistic path to contention with those guys as your core still? I'm skeptical there is.
Talking with Jonathan Willis for just a moment or two more here on WGR. He covers the Oilers for the Athletic in Edmonton. So the idea of a Rasmus Ristolainen trade, like, this is a player, even though you're in Edmonton, I'm imagining you know chapter and verse on the coverage of him and the debates about him, big minutes, pretty good point production. I mean, we're talking about, I think, 40-point seasons. Like, he's had reasonably good offensive seasons, but defensively he can be a sinkhole. And there's been talk lately of a match with Edmonton and maybe perhaps a Ryan Nugent-Hopkins trade. Do you see a fit in Edmonton for Ristolainen, and is Nugent-Hopkins a realistic centerpiece coming back?
I'm going to say no, and I'm going to say no to both of those questions. But that's my perspective, and a lot's going to change on the GM. And I know one of the things that's been stressed repeatedly by Bob Nicholson and the current interim GM, Keith Gretzky, and the outgoing head coach, Ken Hitchcock, is increasing their transition game. So it wouldn't surprise me if they look to upgrade their defense in the offseason. I think Ristolainen's a bad fit in Edmonton for a couple of reasons. The first being that they have a bunch of right-shot offensive defensemen on the way. So you've got Evan Bouchard coming, you've got Ethan Bear coming, you've got Joel Pearson coming from Europe this year. And none of those guys have, you know, Ristolainen's history of offensive production at the NHL. But if you stick, you know, an offensively oriented, somewhat defensively weak defenseman on the right side on one pairing, and then you're bringing Evan Bouchard up and he's bringing the same game to the second pairing, and they're both power play aces, well, they can't both play on the first power play.
Right.
Well, I mean, maybe, but it's going to be tough. So to me, I don't think he's a fit for their long-term needs as much as he'd be a fit for their short-term. And the other part of it is that Edmonton just doesn't have forward depth. Like, Ryan Nugent Hopkins' name gets mentioned a lot, but you look at their, like, Edmonton basically needs to add an entire second line, and if you trade Nugent Hopkins, you need to add four top six players. So, to me, it just doesn't make sense for the Oilers.
Yeah, all right, well, I hear that. All right, but yeah, I suppose a lot of it, we were talking about this earlier, Jonathan, and I guess that maybe dot connecting only goes this far. Well, the Oilers were dopey enough to trade away Taylor Hall for Adam Larson, so maybe, you know, and I think that might just get you to, here, let's talk about this as an idea. But what do I know?
Yeah, well, and it's a legitimate idea to talk about. Like, that's my perspective on the team, but there are lots of people who have opined on the Oilers and say, well, you know, you got to trade somebody to get better, and that defense is a real area of need. So I've offered you my perspective, but you know, don't take it as gospel.
Excellent. All right. Well, Jonathan, thank you very much for this. Appreciate you making the time, and always enjoy the follow on Twitter. So thanks for everything.
Hey, it's always fun to come on the show, Chris. We'll talk to you later.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.